is that we need to take a roll call to determine who's present. The clerk, Mr. Peterson, will now take the roll.
Chair Joaquin?
Present.
Vice Chair Gomez?
Present.
Representative Hertas?
Present.
Representative Anderson?
Present.
Representative Becker Finn?
Present.
Representative Fisher?
Fisher, present.
Representative Green?
Present.
Representative Hassan is excused. Representative Herr?
Present.
Representative Marcourt?
Present.
Representative Mortensen? Representative Mortensen? Representative Pawlowski?
Pawlowski, present.
Representative Torkelson?
Present.
And Representative Mortensen? That concludes the roll, and there's a quorum, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. With that, I want to note that all the committee documents for today have been sent to members and are in the committee page on the House website. The first item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes for March 11th. Representative Hertas, have you had a chance to review the minutes for March 11th?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I move the minutes to be approved.
Thank you. Representative Hertas moves the minutes for March 11th. Does anyone have any questions about those minutes? Seeing none, this will be a voice vote, so go ahead and unmute yourself. All those in favor of the March 11th minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. The minutes are adopted. Members, today we have a full agenda, so brevity from all the testifiers will be greatly appreciated. But members, I still want you to feel free to know that you can ask questions. The first bill we have on the agenda is House File 1787. Representative Bernardi, welcome to the Property Tax Division. Can I get a motion to move the bill before the committee?
I'll move, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hertas. Representative Hertas moves House File 1787 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the division report. We have the bill before us now, so Representative Bernardi, to your bill.
Thank you, Chair Joaquin and members of the committee, for the opportunity to present House File 1787. This is a bill that modifies an existing tax increment financing district in the city of Fridley. Like so many communities across the state, Fridley faces serious challenges and struggles providing housing opportunities for its residents. We're an inner ring suburb, and most of our housing units are 77% of our current housing units in the city are more than 60 years old. In 2018, the HRA approved the creation of a tax increment financing district number 20. This district was created to help clean up and redevelop one of the largest Superfund sites in the state. The site formerly housed a Navy contractor, weapons manufacturer, today known as BAE. Fridley not only wanted to encourage redevelopment, it invested in environmental remediation and cleanup, which is close to the site. It is close proximity to the Mississippi River, which is the main drinking source for many people in the metropolitan area. The resulting cleanup went fast, and it was highly successful Northern Stacks development, and it far exceeded its initial estimates. These factors led to the good problem of excess increment that the city and its HRA now seek to use on housing programs, one of its highest priorities. With a few modest changes, House File 1787 will allow Fridley to use its existing increment from TIF District 21 to provide loans and grants to renovate existing owner-occupied and rental housing units that are outside of the district. It will generate approximately $1 million in excess increment between now and 2041. Investing in housing and providing for residents is the most needed thing and the best way that we can put these dollars to productive use. I will turn this over to our Fridley City Council member, our former HRA commissioner, Steve Eggert.
Mr. Eggert, please welcome to the Property Tax Division. Please state your name for the record and proceed. Let me see if I can find him. You might be on mute. Do you want to, Mr. Eggert? Mr. Eggert, I see that you're on Zoom, but I'm not hearing you. Do you have your mute button on? All right, members. Representative Bernardi, how would you like to proceed?
Well, I was trying to shorten up my testimony, so I stumbled over a few of the words so I could get through it quicker so we could get to Councilmember Eggert more quickly. But I'll share a little bit of his testimony. He is a long-term resident since the early 60s, and he has served on the council now, and on the HRA he had served on for 9 years. And one of the major issues for our community is the aging housing stock and the amount of NOAA, natural occurring affordable housing, needing repairs and investments. The ask allows Fridley to access the excess TIF dollars generated by a highly successful commercial industrial redevelopment, Northern Stacks, and directs those funds to housing rehabilitation program listed in the bill. He was going to go on and share about the different types of housing that we have in our community. And our demographics I wanted to share with you, our median income is 63% of the metropolitan average. 10% of our residents are persons who are living in poverty, and 15% are 65 and older. Our racial makeup is very diverse, and we are the home to people that are 32% of color and 68% of people who are white, and 18% of people in our community are foreign-born. Fridley is a mature, fully developed first-ring suburb with aging housing stock. Our community has evolved into a highly affordable and diverse community, a community with lower resident incomes compared to the metro average. I urge you in the testimony of Council Member Eggert to pass this bill to allow this exception to the uses of the TIF dollars in the TIF district and allow funds to be directed to housing rehabilitation programs. This allows for targeted assistance and builds on established housing programs that are in high demand by our residents, while the HRA has limited resource for housing assistance. Thank you. And I'm sorry, members, that Mr. Eggert wasn't able to join us today. And thank you for listening to our testimony, and we appreciate the support of the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bernardi. I think that you know the project very well, your bill very well, and your city very well. So thank you for sharing. Members, are there any questions for Representative Bernardi?
Madam Chair, I'll renew my motion to move House File 1787 for possible inclusion in a division report.
Thank you. With that, Representative Hurtas renews this motion to include House File 1787 in the division report. So members, thank you. Representative Bernardi, we'll move on to the next bill, which is actually Representative Hurtas, House File 1903. Would you like to move your bill before the division? Representative Hurtas, I think you're still on mute.
Thank you. My screen went blank for a minute. Madam Chair, I'll move House File 1903 for possible inclusion into a division report.
Thank you, Representative Hurtas. Proceed with your bill.
And happy St. Patrick's Day to all. So members, House File 1903 is a TIF bill for the city of Wayzata. It's not a TIF extension in time or anything like that. It is simply a modification of the rules. Members, there is this project that started out called the Lake Effect Project in Wayzata. It was renamed during the promotion of the project to the Panaway Project. It was approximately a $20 million project, of which the city and other donors have funded half of the project up to this point. Last year, there was $4 million of approval in the capital investment bill to advance this project. And there's a little bit of money left, but what we have is a unique situation in Wayzata where we've got the largest contiguous piece of real estate remaining on Lake Minnetonka that is public access. And so what this project does and what the TIF district has right now is part of this project is actually technically in the district, but because of the scope of the project, it goes a little bit outside of the district, and that is mainly a boardwalk that is planned along the lake. So the city of Wayzata is seeking to approve and amend the language to be inclusive so that increment can be used for the entire addition of this boardwalk along the lake. With that, Madam Chair, I have our new mayor in Wayzata. This may be her first time testifying in committee. Mayor Johanna Mouton is here just to say a couple quick words, and we'll keep moving along.
Thank you, Representative Hertas. Mayor Mouton, please state your name for the record and proceed, and welcome to the Property Tax Division.
Thank you. My name is Johanna Mouton. I am the mayor of Wayzata. Good afternoon, Chair Joachim and committee members. We appreciate your time today, and thank you, Representative Hertas, for supporting this request. I know you all have a lot on your plates today, so I will keep this brief. Wayzata is a small town, despite what some may believe. We only have 3 square miles of land and a population of less than 5,000. Despite being a small town, we are a regional destination that rely increasingly on innovative financing in order to build and maintain infrastructure that our residents and visitors utilize. We are requesting clarification to allow certain expenditures to be allowed as eligible TIF expenditures as part of our recently established TIF District Number 6. A portion of TIF District 6, my apologies, it's a mouthful, includes the city's Panaway on Wayzata Bay infrastructure project along Lake Minnetonka, and we want to ensure that we can utilize the scheduled increment within the district on pedestrian improvements adjacent to Lake Street. This request clarifies that the design and construction of Panaway on Wayzata Bay's pedestrian walkway and public lake access infrastructure are deemed expended on activities within the district. 4 important notes. District 6 was established in 2018 to offset private site redevelopment, public infrastructure, and public parking costs. This request is consistent with the original intent of the district. TIF District 6 is a redevelopment TIF district with 24 parcels that is anticipated to generate $20.6 million in increment for the whole district. It is generally located on the western half of downtown Wayzata adjacent to Lake Minnetonka. There have been 4 private redevelopment projects to date that will receive 90% of the TIF from their projects over the term of the district. In addition, there are redevelopment projects that were built in the district that didn't receive TIF, and we have monetized those to pay for needed in-district public parking and infrastructure-related improvements consistent with the overall TIF plan. This request will allow clarification for increment to be utilized for, in addition to public parking and Lake Street infrastructure and sidewalks, another walkway on the lake connecting different points of Lake Street. Please note that this request does not extend the length of the TIF district and the 5-year rule. Thank you, Representative Hertas and Chair Joachim, for this opportunity. Wayzata City Manager Def Dahl and I will stand for any questions the committee members may have. Again, thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Mouton. Any questions for either the mayor or Representative Hertas on the bill? Seeing none, I think you guys covered all the bases. Representative Hertas, final comment.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mayor Mouton, for those comments. And members, this is a rather simple thing, and appreciate your support on it. And with that, I'll renew my motion, Madam Chair, that House File 1903 be included in a possible division report.
Thank you. Representative Hertas renews his motion that House File 1903 be laid over for possible inclusion in a division report. The bill's laid over, and next we have Representative Carlson with House File 1843. Can I have a motion to move House File 1843 before the division?
Madam Chair.
Representative Marquardt moves House File 1843 before the division. We have the bill before us. Welcome back, Representative Carlson, to the Property Tax Division.
Thank you, Chair Joachim. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can. Proceed with your bill.
Wonderful. So, folks, this is House File 1843. Wind and solar energy systems are exempt from property taxes, but they pay a production tax instead. However, a portion of utility-owned wind and solar value is being included in utilities' overall property value, and the property tax is being levied on it. House File 1843 specifies the depreciation factor that will fully remove the exempt property from the utilities' unit value, so that wind and solar are not paying both the property tax and the production tax. A utility's personal property is assessed by the Department of Revenue using a method prescribed in Minnesota Rule 8100. The property is valued as a single unit that starts with all the generating plants, including wind and solar, and all the transmission and distribution lines and substations throughout the state. Under the current methodology, the value of all the utility's exempt personal property is calculated. The unit's average depreciation rate is applied to it, and the resulting amount is deducted from the unit value. This approach is rational for components of large depreciable assets like coal power plants. But unless the actual depreciation is used for wind and solar, some of their value remains in the unit, and the personal property tax is levied on it. That portion of wind and solar are both of both the personal property tax, I'm sorry, that portion of wind and solar pays both the personal property tax and the production tax. It is also noteworthy that the current methodology predates utilities owning any wind and solar energy systems. So members, in short, this bill proposes to use actual depreciation for property in which the entire asset is exempt, such as wind and solar, and maintain the current methodology for components of large depreciable assets, such as pollution control property attached to coal power plants. You then multiply the results by the market to book ratio. Okay, so there's a lot of math in there I know I was describing, but this essentially provides for a more up-to-date methodology in terms of determining the depreciation for wind and solar. Real quick, just wanted to share with the members some of the implications. So this under this proposal, it is estimated that the taxable unit value for utility companies will decrease by $272 million statewide for taxes payable in 2023 and $257 million for taxes payable in 2024. Due to the decrease in taxable unit value, the proposal would shift an estimated $6 million of property taxes away from the utility companies and onto other properties, including homestead. As a result, the property tax shift, we're looking at about $160,000 that the state would pay in terms of refunds. Some good news there, though, is eventually the actual depreciation rate of these systems would be greater than the system plant depreciation rate used under the current method. This would result in a higher taxable unit value for utility companies compared to the current. So taking a hit initially, and that would be made up over time. So I'm going to stop there. I know that was a mouthful. I do have a testifier, Mr. Chris Arnold from Xcel Energy, to also speak on behalf of the bill.
Thank you, Representative Carlson, and for the explanation and pointing out the small fiscal note, just because of the property tax relief and renters credit interaction. So, Mr. Arnold, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Chris Arnold, and I'm the Senior Director of Tax Services for Xcel Energy. Thank you for providing the opportunity to testify today, and thank you, Representative Carlson, for carrying this bill for us. As Representative Carlson explained, House File 1843 proposes a change to a method that the department uses to calculate or to deduct the value of wind and solar property from the utility's overall value. And as you know, wind and solar systems pay a production tax in lieu of property tax. Representative Carlson provided a good background on the issue, so I'll spare you some of those comments I was going to provide and maybe jump down to a couple other items. First of all, you know, when Rule 8100 was developed back in 2007, this situation really wasn't contemplated. Utility generation property then consisted mainly of large centralized power stations. And when Xcel Energy started constructing its own wind in 2009, the existing valuation method was naturally applied to it. But now we realize that since then, Xcel Energy customers have paid about $43 million in personal property tax on wind that will not be offset in later years of the depreciation cycle. This is in addition to the production taxes that were paid on the same property each year. HF 1843 would address these unintended consequences by using actual depreciation to deduct the value of wind and solar from the unit. Now I'd like to make two brief comments on the property tax benchmarks. The benchmark section indicates a neutral on the question of whether the bill provides equity or business competitiveness. This is something we may not have adequately conveyed to the department, but this bill, we believe, corrects an inequity because wind and solar systems owned by private power producers are being taxed less than identical property owned by a utility. Also, this bill improves business competitiveness. We compete against private wind energy producers on price. When the Public Utilities Commission approves an order for Xcel to add wind or solar energy to its system, we bid against wind and solar developers whose price does not include personal property taxes. By paying property taxes up front, we lose the time value of tens of millions of dollars. We sell our excess energy into competitive wholesale energy markets, and we compete to attract businesses to our state and our communities based on our energy prices. Also, our businesses and industrial customers are in competitive markets with their products, and property taxes are passed directly through to them on their bills and are reflected in their prices. The revenue note shows that the bill would have a cost to the state of $160,000 in each of 2024 and 2025 based on wind facilities we are planning to build. We would respectfully submit that if a tax is inadvertently being imposed on exempt property, the taxpayer should not have to keep paying once it's discovered. The $43 million that customers paid over the last decade allows other taxpayers to pay less. We believe this should be corrected going forward. Lastly, it's important to address this problem now. Xcel Energy is planning to add thousands of megawatts of wind and solar to its system in the next several years, and this problem will only become harder and more costly to fix. Madam Chair and members, we appreciate the time you've given us to explain our situation, and we'd be happy to answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Arendt. I do appreciate the fact that you brought this bill forward, and I appreciate Representative Carlson for carrying it and for those noting the fiscal note and the benchmarks on the back. So it does increase transparency for taxpayers and increase responsiveness for economic conditions and decreases complexity. So folks always check out those fiscal notes or the revenue estimates. They have some great information on there. Members, do we have any questions for Mr. Arendt or Representative Carlson? Well, Representative Carlson, I think officially now that you can teach a math class now. Any final comments?
Well, I was kind of hoping for some questions, but I should be grateful. I spent a lot of time just getting smart on the whole bill, so I was hoping to show some of my new knowledge here today, but that's okay. Madam Chair and members, in conclusion, this bill improves accuracy and compliance with statutes in Rule 8100, continues the methodology for property that it is intended for, facilitates transition in the methodology as the industry replaces coal plants and associated pollution control property with renewables. And as Mr. Arend did say, by addressing this now, we can avoid abrupt changes. So appreciate your support.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. And with that, Representative Marquardt renews his motion that House File 1843 be laid over for possible inclusion in the division report. The bill's laid over, and next on the agenda, we have another bill from Representative Hertaus, House File 1095. Representative Hertaus, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Yes, I'd like to move House File 1095 for possible inclusion in the division report.
Representative Hertaus moves House File 1095 before the division, and we have an amendment, an A1 amendment. Representative Hertaus, would you like to move your amendment?
Madam Chair, I do not have that in my file. I'm sorry. So you move the amendment.
The amendments, I believe, just changes your effective date. To begin with, properties taxable payable, property taxes payable in 2022. Members, do you have that amendment in your electronic packets, I believe? I'm not seeing folks that don't. Would you like to move that amendment to change the effective date, Representative Hurtaz, or would you like us to wait until the division?
No, that's fine. Thank you for that clarification, and I apologize for not having that in my packet. Yes, it would be effective for that because members, we pass this into law, would be taxes payable in the following year. So anything this year would be paid 22. So, Madam Chair, what this is rather simple. I won't spend a lot of time on it.
Here, let's finish up with the A1 amendment. Members, we have the A1 amendment before us. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Thank you, members. Just checking to make sure you're awake here. Representative Hurtaz, proceed with your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is a bill about manufactured housing. We have had frequent conversations about things we can do to help make alternate forms of housing or shelter more affordable, particularly with manufactured homes and in mobile home parks. The properties are actually titled property, and they kind of go down in value over time, like a car or a boat. Yet these properties were being taxed at 125% of their value. And so all the bill does is reduces and lowers the tax burden for owner-occupied mobile homes and property in mobile homes parks to a tax rate of 0.75. And that's it.
Thank you, Representative Hurtaz. Members, any questions for Representative Hurtaz? Well, members, seeing none, Representative Hurtaz, final comments.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and this is straightforward. I appreciate everybody considering that, and with that, I'll move House File 1095 to be laid over or possible inclusion into the division report.
As amended.
As amended, thank you.
Thank you. Representative Hurtaz renews his motion that House File 1095 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in the division report. With that, the next bill we have on the agenda is House File 1812 from Representative Becker Finn. Representative Becker Finn, would you like to move your bill before the division?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Was not expecting you to move so fast on the agenda today. I will move 1812 in front of the division.
Yes,
we're trying real hard.
I can't tell if everybody's just sleepy or we're just really that efficient.
I was preparing, Madam Chair.
Representative Becker Finn moves House File 1812 before the division. We have the bill before us now. Representative Becker Finn, to your bill.
Yep, thank you, Madam Chair. So House File 1812 is a proposal I'm carrying on behalf of the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe that would seek to return 38 parcels owned by the band to tax-exempt status. All the parcels are located within Cass County. These parcels had been exempted as institutions of purely public charity for several years, but a routine review of the purely public charity exemption by the Department of Revenue in 2019 resulted in their applications being denied because the band is obviously, as a tribal nation, not a 501c3. After working closely with Cass County and the Department of Revenue, it was determined that a legislative fix would be necessary, specifically exempting these parcels. Similar bill language was advanced during the 2020 session, but ultimately derailed by the pandemic, and unfortunately, because of the delay, more complications have occurred. The band and Cass County have been in agreement that these parcels should return to tax-exempt status. There's more work to do regarding the refund of taxes paid by the band last year. The band is working closely with the affected townships and other local government stakeholders to seek a fair resolution to this issue. Essentially, the county and townships received a tax error in their favor last year due to this legislative fix not occurring sooner. And now the band, the Leech Lake Band are now the ones holding the bill. I know all parties are working together to find a path forward to make sure these parcels are returned to their correct tax exempt status through legislation, hopefully this session, to avoid any further complications. And with that, I will turn it over to my testifier, Representative Leroy Staples Fairbanks from Leech Lake.
Yes, Representative Staples Fairbanks, welcome to the Property Tax Division. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, I'm Leroy Staples Fairbanks from the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe. Thank you for having me. Thank you, members, and Representative Becker Finn for your important work on this legislation. As Representative Becker Finn mentioned, the land parcels in question had been exempted as institutions of purely public charity for several years. The land in question continues to be used for the same charitable purposes. For example, our community relies on these parcels for public housing, food distribution program, health clinics, and addiction treatment services. These parcels would be tax exempt if they were owned by state or local governments or by a nonprofit. And this legislation ensures that they will not be at a financial disadvantage simply because they are owned by a tribal government. We appreciate Cass County's support over the past year in our effort to return these parcels to tax exempt status, as well as for the guidance from the Minnesota Department of Revenue. Regarding the retroactive part of this bill, myself and other Leech Lake Band of officials are personally in contact with many of the township school districts affected by the extra property taxes that the Leech Lake Band paid last year. We are working to find a resolution that is workable for them and makes the band whole. We are committed to continue these efforts with our neighbors in Cass County, and we thank the committee for your time today.
Thank you, Mr. Staples Fairbanks. Next up, we have, lost my track of things here. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We don't have any further testifiers unless there are additional questions from members.
Okay. Thank you for clearing that up, Representative. I was looking at two different sheets and I had one more person, but I see that we don't now. So thank you. Members, do we have, first I would just want to note in your electronic packets, there's some letters received from various Cass County townships. And then also I want to check and see if folks have any questions for the testifier or Representative Becker Finn. Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is for either the testifier or the author. Just some questions that came up while I was listening to this. Is there a reason why the properties weren't in trust?
Representative Becker Finn.
I will turn it over to Representative Staples Fairbanks.
Representative Staples Fairbanks.
By a show of hands, does everybody know the full land in the trust process? Probably not. And it's
my guess is not. Yeah.
But. Okay. So, you know, just for everybody on the call here, that there is a process that can get land into trust for federally recognized tribes, but oftentimes it is not an easy process. So we've had efforts over the years where we have been successful in getting particular pieces of land in the trust, but it's a really, really long process. And along that process, you know, all the way out to DC, they want public comment, local public comment. And sometimes local public comment is not favorable and it can really slow these things down. And so a lot of the parcels that we're talking about today are for public use. And eventually over time, the ideal goal would be to put these in the trust, but for right now, you know, we're dealing with the exemption status, but with your help, we can get all these parcels in the trust. Thank you.
Representative Green, follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Fairbanks, I don't want you to believe that I think you should put them in the trust. I don't really like the trust the way it's set up, because it basically turns the land back over to the federal government. I was just curious because it sounds like these have been in the same category of possession for some time, and that's just why the subject came up for me here. And I'm trying to go on my old computer so I can keep the Zoom meeting on my new one, and so I don't have the packet that I can't get it to come up on there. probably because of my version, but was there any opposition to this from the local governments, whether they be township or county or school district?
Representative Becker Finn.
I thank you, Madam Chair. And first, I just want to, if it wasn't clear in the introduction, that Representative Staples Fairbanks is an elected member of our tribal council. So just wanted to remind folks in recognizing him. You know, there has not been, you know, this has been in the works for over a year, and there is not, had not been any opposition to, you know, going back to making the 38 parcels tax exempt. Where there is the sticking point is essentially, you know, there was a tax error in the favor of the townships and the county, and the band would like to be made whole, and it just becomes more complicated because then the townships and the county would have to come up with those funds. And so the many conversations this week and continuing on tomorrow and Friday as well to try to find a resolution that is fair for everybody. You know, I think back to your original question, ideally, no, the tribe wouldn't be paying taxes on land that's within the reservation boundaries that is owned by the tribe. But unfortunately, this is where we find ourselves. And this is actually you know, it's bad when passing a bill through the legislature is the quickest way to resolve an issue. But that's the reality of getting things into trust status or otherwise dealing with the feds on this kind of issue. And I don't know if Representative Staples Fairbanks has anything else to weigh in regarding that.
Representative Staples Fairbanks.
Yeah, good. Representative Green, could you just restate the question, please?
Representative Green.
Thank you. The question just was, because I can't get into the letters that are in the packet, I was wondering if there was any local opposition, whether it be from the counties, townships, or school districts.
Representative Staples Fairbanks.
So up until about 3 weeks ago, I was unaware of any opposition. And so I think this is really kind of ramping up really quickly because more information needs to be shared amongst Leech Lake and the taxing districts. And so I have a meeting set up with the chairman or president of the Association of Townships from the state of Minnesota, along with some officials from Cass County, to kind of re-go over and clarify some concerns or misconceptions, are really just trying to, you know, shore up anybody's concerns that they have with this going forward, because generally across the board, it seemed last year and for the most part, the start and this whole session that everybody was in support and it was a non-issue. The only issue was around language of the bill, as far as I knew up until about 2 weeks ago, 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Representative Green, follow up.
No, thank you, Madam Chair. I just always like to see these things handled locally if they can. I always think it makes for better relationships on a local level.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There is a letter in our packet dated the 16th of March from, I would assume, township directors, and they did have some questions in reading it about which property was included and where the exempt property is located. So there does seem to be some question as to what exactly is included in that letter that's dated the 16th of this month from the directors of the districts of the townships up in that county.
Representative Becker Finn.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I want to clarify a couple things. One, this issue can't be handled locally. That's why we're bringing the bill forward. This was jointly worked on back in last year, over a year ago, to get to this point and realizing that there wasn't a way to handle this without coming to the legislature. As far as the parcel issue, so there's some disagreement about the constitutionality of naming specific parcels of land. And, you know, but I will say for the record that the intention is regarding the 38 parcels that are listed. I have the handout in front of me, but I don't know if that was something that was with the entire committee. I could certainly get that sent out to folks, but, you know, certainly the intention is that it's those parcels. And I don't know if there's someone from research who wants to weigh in, House Research wants to weigh in on that, but I believe you run into the special law issue with the language if you're naming specific parcels of parcel of land, especially when there's that many of them.
Mr. Swanson, I see you appear on my screen. Go ahead.
Madam Chair and members, Representative Beckerfin is correct. There was actually an earlier version of this bill that actually listed out each individual parcel identification number to try to clarify which parcels were involved with this, but there was some concern within the revisor's office that that language would not be constitutional.
Thank you, Mr. Swanson. Representative Anderson, follow up. Nope, okay. Members, do I have any other questions for the testifier or Representative Beckerfin? Seeing none, Representative Beckerfin, closing comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members. Obviously, whenever we talk about trust land issues and federal issues, it can get a little complicated, but ultimately, this is land that's being used for a public purpose and being used and is owned by the band. And we really need to make sure we take care of this legislative fix this year to prevent any further complications happening down the line, and just really appreciate your support and would renew my motion to lay this for possible inclusion in the report.
Thank you, Representative Beckerfin. Representative Beckerfin renews her motion that House File 1812 be laid over for possible inclusion in the division report. The bill's laid over. And with that, my bill's next on the agenda, so I want to turn the virtual gavel over to Representative Gomez. Chair Gomez.
I'm sorry, just a moment, Madam.
That's okay. With that, maybe I'll move my own bill before the committee real quick. I move House File 1735 before the committee for possible inclusion in the division report. And with the Madam Chair's okay, I would like to also move the DE1 amendment.
Representative Joachim has moved the DE1 amendment. Can you please explain to us what the amendment does?
Yes, thank you, Chair Gomez. The DE1, I lost my place here. Just a minute. I've got to find my notes. here we go. Madam Chair, thank you. The DE1 amendment actually just updates the tables with the February forecast.
Any discussion to the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. So we have the bill as amended before us. Chair Joachim, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I, of course, picked this time to get the coughs here. Thank you for hearing House File 1735 today. This bill further invests in our property tax refund and renter's credit program. This program provides a little support for folks earning lower wages who are on fixed incomes and struggle to afford the cost of safe housing as well as meet other basic needs. In particular, the renter's credit is effective at reaching the lowest income households in our communities all across the state. About 3/4 of households receiving the renter's credit have incomes of $40,000 or less. The property tax refund provides similar relief for folks in owner-occupied housing who earn lower incomes, maybe seniors on fixed budgets, or families struggling to make ends meet. This bill would lower the copay for renters to provide relief and would both lower the copay and increase the maximum refund for homeowners. There are letters of support in the members' packets from the Municipal Legislative Commission and from a large coalition who are supporting the added investment in the renter's credit. There's also an informational packet from the Minnesota Budget Project. But members, I just want to let you know that after receiving the revenue estimate, there may need to be some adjustments made to the property tax refund portion of the bill before the division report. But I wanted to get the proposal in front of you for discussion and for folks to hear how successful these programs are. I have three testifiers with me today to highlight just that, and I've asked them to be brief as we have one more item on our agenda after this.
The first testifier is Mr. Dahl. Mr. Dahl, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Chair Gomez and members of the committee. My name is Michael Dahl. I'm the Public Policy Director with Homeline, a statewide tenant advocacy organization. And through our hotline, we offer free and confidential legal advice, receiving over 1,000 calls each month. What we have heard from Minnesota renters is that the renter's credit is a critical asset. The relief provided by the renter's credit is urgently needed for people struggling to afford rent. As noted by a pre-pandemic report from the Minnesota Housing Partnership, the State of the State's Housing 2019, in the last two decades, the median renter income has decreased by 5%, yet the median gross rent has increased by 13%. The cost of rent is rising faster than incomes, and renters just can't keep up. Additionally, affordable housing is hard to come by. 22% of renter households pay more than 50% of their income in rent. Because of this, renters are often made to choose between essential items and paying rent. The renter's credit allows people to purchase things they need. Recipients use the credit to buy essential items like school supplies, clothing, non-perishable food, soap, cleaning and laundry supplies, toilet paper, and for far well in advance, even gifts for the holidays. They also use the renter's credit to pay for expensive necessities like insurance, car repairs, license tabs, dental care, eyeglasses, and medications. A while back, we heard from a 75-year-old woman named Joyce from Spring Lake. She lives on a limited income, and she shared with us that in order to make ends meet, she has to cut her pills in half just to make them last longer. She relies on the renter's credit to pay for her medication as well as the eyeglasses and dental care. This is not an isolated incident. Since many of these purchases happen locally, the credit also allows helps local businesses. An increase in the renter's credit is needed to help low-income renters afford essential items and boost Minnesota's economy. Thank you for the time to testify, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Dahl. Next up is Nan Madden. Ms. Madden, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Nan Madden. I'm director of the Minnesota Budget Project, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify in support of the renter's credit provisions in House File 1735, and I'd like to thank Chair Youakim for bringing this bill forward. Like all Minnesotans, Minnesota renters want safe and affordable homes for themselves and their families. But as you've heard, some Minnesotans earning lower wages or on fixed incomes struggle to afford the cost of housing and other basic necessities. Our renter's credit is a powerful tool that the state uses to put a limit on how big a share of a household's budget can go towards paying their property taxes. It refunds a portion of the property taxes that renters have paid through their rents. Minnesotans can qualify for the renter's credit if they meet income limits and their property taxes are considered high for their income level. As Chair Youakim mentioned, I provided a handout to the committee that shows the positive impact of the renter's credit in Minnesota and in each county. 30% of the households who receive the renter's credit include senior citizens or people living with severe disabilities. And this percentage is higher in many parts of greater Minnesota. In fact, there are 21 Minnesota counties in greater Minnesota where more than half of the people who receive the renter's credit are either seniors or people with disabilities. This bill would provide an average $57 in additional renter's credit for 275,000 currently eligible Minnesota households. This bill responds to some of the economic challenges faced by Minnesota renters, and many of those who would benefit are the essential workers that we've all come to count on more than ever. Thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Madden. Next up, we have Paul Eager. Mr. Eager, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Paul Eager, and I'm Vice President of Governmental Affairs for the Minnesota Realtors Association. We're a statewide business trade association with over 21,000 members working with buyers and sellers of all types of property in every corner of the state. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today in support of Representative Youakim's House File 1735 and the support that this bill provides homeowners by increasing homestead credit refunds. The Homestead Credit Refund Program makes housing more affordable. Saving money for a down payment and purchasing a home is just the first step in becoming a homeowner, and the PTR program assists homeowners whose property taxes are high relative to their income. According to the Department of Revenue's 2021 Minnesota Tax Incidence Study, quote, the property tax refunds offset 12.8% of the residential property tax burden, and the refunds offset a much higher portion in the lowest five deciles. One of the strengths of this program is it provides policymakers options for increasing the support provided to homeowners, such as increasing the maximum refund, decreasing the copayment percentage, lowering the threshold percentage for determining eligibility, and increasing the household income for eligibility. And finally, we just want to encourage the legislature and the Department of Revenue to continue to think about how to get the word out about this important program to homeowners and renters who qualify so more Minnesotans can get the help they're eligible to receive. Thank you again for the opportunity to testify and to Representative Joachim for bringing this bill forward.
Thank you, Mr. Agar, for joining us and for your testimony. If the testifiers can stick around for a little bit, in case any of the members have questions, that would be great. Members, in your packet, there's a revenue estimate from House Fiscal. I wonder if Ms. Schill could just walk us through the revenue estimate briefly.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. My name is Kathy Schill. I'm with House Fiscal. The revenue estimate, you have, make sure you have the as amended version, House File 1735-DE1. The homestead credit state refund would be impacted. The revenue loss, meaning the cost of the program, is $52.4 million in fiscal 2023, $55.2 million in 2024, and $56.9 million in 2025. The renter's property tax refund is likewise. The revenue loss, that means the cost of the program, is in fiscal 2023, $15,700,000, fiscal 24, $16 million, and fiscal 2025, $16.2 million. These would take place for rent paid in 2021 and for property tax payable in 2022.
Thank you so much for that, Ms. Schill, and thanks for all your work. We appreciate it. Members, are there any questions for the testifiers or for Chair Joachim on House File 1735? I'm not seeing any. Chair Joachim, did you have any final comments you wanted to share with the committee?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Ms. Schill, for walking through the revenue estimate. As I said, after receiving this back, we might be doing some adjustments to the homestead credit refund portion to fit within a budget for the division report. So thank you for your time and attention today, Madam Chair and members. And as you've heard in testimony, the renter's credit and the property tax refund programs are important investments that we have, that we make in all of our communities. I hope to have your support as we move forward a version of this bill into the division report. Thank you. And with that, I renew my motion that House File 1735 I should have let you do this, Madam Chair. I'm sorry. I'm going to let you do it because I'm clearly tongue-tied.
Thank you so much, Chair Joachim. So Chair Joachim moves her motion that House File 1735 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in the division report. And the bill's laid over. Thank you so much, Chair Joachim. And I'm handing the gavel back over to you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for getting that sentence up when I could not. With us, we have House File 1970 next on the agenda, and it is Representative Howard's bill, but I think he may still be stuck in higher ed, so Representative Carlson is going to pinch hit for him. Could I get somebody to move the House File 1970 before the division?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hertaz. Representative Hertaz moves House File 1970 before the division. We have the bill before the division. Mr. Representative Carlson, please proceed with the presentation of the bill.
Thank you, Chair Joachim. It's good to be back. This is House File 1970, which allows for the creation of two tax increment finance districts within the city of Bloomington, and also provides for some special rules for both of them. The first district is at is what we are calling the American Boulevard TIF district. Just to give you a point of reference, this is at, if you drive on 494 by the REI store, that kind of area around there. So American Boulevard and Lindell Avenue would be the intersection. And then the other TIF district is at 98th and Aldrich. I do have a testifier with me here today. It's the new Bloomington HRA administrator, Ms. Coleman, and I believe she has some testimony to provide as well.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. Long time no see. Ms. Coleman, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you. My name is Erica Coleman. So good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Erica Coleman. I'm the administrator of the Housing and Redevelopment Authority in and for the City of Bloomington. And today I'm speaking in support of House File 1970. Bloomington is working to address housing stability needs for residents. One of our areas of focus is redevelopment to provide more units at varying levels of affordability with community amenities. There are two requests for redevelopment TIF districts. The first is at 700 American, which is a site of potential development that includes acquisition of part or all of two additional parcels to advance a high density project. The goals of the development would include developing vertical mixed use buildings that incorporate the city's affordable housing policy and adds commercial space, maximize development on two parcels and a portion of another parcel of underutilized space, and to take away barrier for development by undergrounding overhead power lines and transformers, allowing the cost of undergrounding of overhead power lines, regardless if in the district or outside of it, is a deviation from existing TIF statute that would allow the sites to be developable for higher density, not just single story uses. The second request at 98th and Aldrich, is a site of transformative 2.60 acres transit-oriented mixed-use development in the heart of Bloomington's Gateway District, which is between Interstate 35W and Lindale. This potential development includes a partnership between Bloomington, Metro Transit, Met Council, and Hennepin County. The goals of the development include a transit-oriented development on the Orange Line with a 200-plus stall transit parking ramp, bus staging, and increase in transit users. Development of 250 to 375 units of high-density rental housing incorporating the city's affordable housing policy, commercial space for transit riders and residents, and maximizing development on three underutilized vacant parcels. There are two deviation requests from the existing TIF statute. Without the redevelopment TIF, the city-owned parcel would not be able to be developed and take advantage of the existing public infrastructure improvements, such as the Orange Line Transit Station and BRT running through the project. And the city would not be in a position to fund the construction of a parking garage at the Orange Line Transit Station, which allows for space to develop the housing and retail portions of the project. The flexibility is critical to addressing housing needs in harmony with transit, infrastructure, and community amenities. Thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I appreciate your consideration of House File 1970.
Thank you, Ms. Coleman. Members, does anybody have any questions for Ms. Coleman or Representative Carlson? Well, Representative Carlson, you knocked another one out of the park. With that, Representative Hertaus renews his motion that House File 1970 be laid over for possible inclusion in the division report. This bill's laid over. I want to thank members for your work today. I want to thank you for the work that you've put in over the last few months. It's really been a joy, and thank staff for all their work. This isn't our last hurrah today, but just wanted to make sure that I express my gratitude. The plan for the next week, coming week, is for the division report to get posted over the weekend, and then for us to meet at 8:30 a.m. on Monday from 8:30 to 10, I believe is our slotted time, for staff to go over the language and for us to take public testimony. And then on Wednesday next week, we'll have our normal time slot for markup of the bill. Please don't hesitate to reach out to me to speak in if you have any questions. And with that, members, we are adjourned.